Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio, and federalnewsradio.com. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Everybody get ready for Foodie and the Beast with David Nikki Nellis. A foodie born and bred, my wife Nikki loves chatting up chefs, dining out, and insider industry buzz.
And my husband David thinks a great meal is nothing but a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under $20. Because he is cheap.
Well, maybe so, but Foodie married Beast anyway, and together we've got the food and wine variety show that has everyone talking.
It's Foodie and the Beast, and we are on now.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. I'm Nikki Nellis. I sound this way because I had a rough night, man.
But tonight I might.
Welcome to the show. Before we get into the show, I just want to remind everybody we're doing this show live from Early Mountain Vineyard out in Madison, Virginia next week. If you're interested in being in the audience, it's special. You got to go to earlymountain.com and get your tickets.
Well, can I just cut in? I mean, it's not just us appearing at Early Mountain Vineyards. No, although...
Who the hell cares about anything else?
Well, it is a perk. But they are doing their first ever barbecue festival. And if you haven't had the pleasure of going out to this vineyard, it is spectacular. It is so gorgeous. And the last time we were there, we sold out. We had a terrific show and then stayed and partied for a couple hours.
I've been
hours.
Selling out my entire profession. Life,
right.
So it really
doesn't
matter. But the place is more manicured than Disney World, I have to say. It's
gorgeous. Beautiful. So
right.
Come join us, please.
So today, our focus, we're doing an all-everything show today, talking with the folks from Neighborhood Restaurant Group. We're going to get into that in a minute, but NRG owns many of the favorite restaurants that you love, and there's a unique approach to how those restaurants run, and you'll hear everything about it. Michael Babin, who's the founder and CEO of NRG, is in with us. As is Brent Kroll, who's their wine director and sommelier of the entire group.
Also with us is Kyle Bailey, who's the executive chef at Church Key, Birch & Barley, and the soon-to-come Blue Jacket. And his wife, executive pastry chef of all of Neighborhood Restaurant Group, Tiffany McIsaac.
She is sweet.
She's yummy.
Hello, baby.
Actually true.
If I was going to kiss up to anybody in this room, I'd like Babin can slide back. It's Tiffany.
Of course, we also have Greg Engert, who is back. He is a beer director and partner at Church Key. And Megan Parisi is the brewmaster at Blue Jacket.
And Tony Chittum, who is the award-winning chef. He was at Vermilion, which is an NRG property. And he's going to be the executive chef at this coming soon, Iron Gate down on N Street, Northwest, a former haunt of mine with innocent young things. Back in the day. And Nate Anda, who is running Red.
It would not have been me, just so you know, because back in the day, I wasn't born yet.
No, she wasn't. And I can also say, she wasn't innocent either. So, and we'll be talking to Nate Anda. But Michael, let's start with you, and we should really start
from
the start.
Well, you just blew right past Nate Anda as if he wasn't
Nate
important.
Nate is the master of charcuterie. He's the master of smoking, and I don't mean anything illegal.
We know of.
And as far as I can tell from that article, he's the master of blowing up old walk-in freezers. Too, smoking days. We'll get into that. But, Michael, let's start with you because the NRG story is an interesting one and your whole take on how these organizations should run is interesting. So hit it.
Well, one of the big differences between us, our group, and a lot of other groups is the presence of all the people in this room. This is not a group about, a leader on high, really. It's about collaboration, and it's about, trying to find the very best chefs and managers, beverage people.
That's very humble.
No, it's actually true, as I'm sure they would be willing to... tell you, but
I don't know. I think once the drinks start, it could get a little different in here. Everybody's nice and quiet right now.
Well, it's that really is the thing. We wanted every restaurant to have its own soul and its own chef and its own beverage program that would be distinctive and different and to give a lot of latitude to the people at the restaurants.
But how did you come to that? I mean, when you first started, you opened Evening Star restaurant.
Evening Star, right.
I mean, Were you looking to open multiple restaurants at that point, or you're just like, I just want to open up a little restaurant?
I was looking to open a bar close enough to walk to, and I succeeded in that.
The lofty goal.
And it was right in my neighborhood. I did not think I was getting into the restaurant business, but I loved it. I loved the people that I got to work with. And one thing led to another. A few years later, I quit my day job and started doing this full time. So that's really...
So as you began opening up other properties, how did you decide your path?
Yeah. Well, that was a decision that we made at the I wanted these restaurants to be chef driven.
Okay.
We wanted to have a great commitment to ingredient, lots of integrity, everything to be made in house. This was 16 years ago, so that was a little bit more, you know, novel then than it is today.
Well, especially a chef led concept.
Yes.
What was it, because you weren't a chef that you went that way? I mean, what was it that brought you
there?
Those
are the kind of restaurants that I love.
Okay.
Those are the kind of restaurants that I loved going to. They feel different, I think, than the other kind, although there's some great ones of the other kind.
No, come on, let's get into it. Let's talk about the other kind.
But, those are the kind of restaurants that I always like. And so those are the kind of restaurants that would be, you know.
Well, the other thing that, and because, you know, the show isn't named Foodie and the Beast, you know, in a whimsical way. What I enjoy about all your restaurants is they really are, you know, the word neighborhood is essential to the whole process because they're just very easy to like and easy to go. You know, there's none of that intimidation, you know. Fine dining, finer dining kind of thing. Which...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
No, right, well, no. There is for me. I don't love it. I mean, I love
going
in someplace.
That's why I don't go out with him very often.
That's okay. But I mean, that's one of the things about, really, I've been to every one of your restaurants, I think, and you just go in and it's just easy going and
you haven't
back.
Been to GBD.
It works. It's very crisp and all that. But
well,
everybody's,
everybody's...
Nobody's all puffed up with the, you know, chauvinism of the restaurant.
I think some of the restaurants and some of the chefs who are here and people who are here today certainly are doing food that would be perfectly, would look right in a fine dining restaurant.
Absolutely.
But we want the feel of the place to be a little bit different than that, a little bit more accessible, easier. Somebody wants to come in and have a blowout meal, they can do that. But if they just want to have a great meal on a Tuesday night, they can do that too. So,
well, so let's talk about... You started with Evening Star.
Mm-hmm.
What was the progression?
So we went Evening Star. We opened a couple of bars in that space. We opened a wine shop next door called Planet Wine. Then we opened Vermilion Restaurant, Tallulah and Eat Bar, Rustico, Buzz Bakery, and then Columbia Firehouse, Birch and Barley, and Church Key. Then another Rustico and another Buzz in Arlington. And then... About 5 years ago, we started working on the Red Apron brand with Nathan and building that very long-term process. But finally, at the beginning of this year, we opened our first location and then the second location.
Mm-hmm.
And then we opened GBD, Golden Brown and Delicious, just about a month and a half ago.
Right. And then you have...
So then we have coming Blue Jacket Brewery, which will have a restaurant and bar attached to it. The Iron Gate, which is Washington's oldest restaurant, it opened in 1923. We'll be reopening that, and then the third Red Apron, which will have a kind of a restaurant and bar attached to it as well.
This is very consistent for a guy who just wanted to open a bar he could walk to.
Yeah, well, things got a little out of control.
Now you need a chatter.
Right, I see chatter back there.
I might have.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
We were given instructions not to say any new information.
No.
You just let the cat out of the bag.
All right. So why don't we, let's talk to some of these guys. Brent, step up to the plate, man.
So, Michael, let's talk about Brent as one of your latest additions, because you never had a wine director over your whole organization before, did you?
Not really, not in the same way that that Brent is. I think a lot of people know that we have several places that are kind of dedicated to beer, and we have great cocktail programs that are kind of developed at the restaurants. But wine has been important from the very beginning. We opened a wine store, one of the first things we did. Tallulah had a 70 by the glass list when it first opened. So we've been running these programs, but without having the kind of leader that they really need. So we actually were aware of Brent for a long time and his work at Adore and even before that.
Ardeo, right?
We met you when you were at Ardeo, and everybody's going, "How old is that dude?" And we kept But then we found out you had just had your bar mitzvah, and congratulations! Yeah, and now you're here.
I've been at Ardeo. I've been old enough to drink for less than 2 years when Ashok brought me on there.
So amazing!
I have literally grown up on this show.
All right, we're thrilled.
Let's hear about the program at NRG.
Programs are great. We have a lot of new stuff in the works too. Amazing chefs. I brought a few products today that are representative of some of the special concepts that are within the company.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it is trying to inspire good people, like good talent that are already at existing restaurants to like.
But what's your process? Do you go in and meet with each of the chefs and take a look at the restaurant and say, this place looks to me like a Beaujolais?
Doesn't it sound like he knows what he's doing?
The only other thing I could think of was Thunderbird.
My husband has a new career.
I mean, how do you do it?
I just kind of like look at the menu, make sure it's balanced, that it fits with the food, make sure that the person that's there, you know, and everyday basis with staff is saying the right things, doing the right type of education, just making sure that they have the right content where, you know, this should be the type of group where if people want to come and learn about wine, learn about food, learn about beer, they're going to flourish because they're going to have the materials.
You mean like our son, Sam?
Yeah.
Shout out to Sam Nellis, who's lugging dirty dishes right now at Birch and Barley, and nothing suits him better. He never did it at home, by the way. He always had to go to the bathroom when it was time to clear the table, but that's just something else. So, but what do you do? Do you go in, I mean, because you are new, do you look at a wine program at a specific restaurant and just kind of leave well enough alone, or are you readjusting the knobs?
You can only do a small amount at a time because, I mean, they're not really like tangible.
You don't want to be like a bull in a china shop.
So you can only change so much so often. So at a lot of these places, kind of looking at price points, looking at styles, looking at kind of what the restaurant calls for.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's just a little bit at a time.
Well, so what did you bring in today?
I brought Salapos. It's a sparkling Muscafilaro from Greece. So hoping to have this
at an Iron Gate.
Yeah. Yeah. Salapos, though, this is a guy who I had the pleasure of meeting.
Mm-hmm.
He is from Peloponnese. He went to study in Burgundy, which is kind of like a Goodwill Hunting type story, especially from the part of Greece where he's from, and just learned how to make wine in the champagne method.
Cool.
Brought it back. And now this is the only wine from Greece that's done in the champagne method.
Cool.
Neat.
From their most prolific aperitif grape.
All right, you pop in and pour it, and we're going to talk to Colin Tiffany, who have to book shortly. So, Nick.
Crab cake competition. All right, well, Kyle and Tiffany have both been on the show multiple times to talk about. Oh, wait, we're savoring. Everybody back
Everybody's moving.
Woo! All right. We'll clean that up, Andy, I promise.
Wait, I'm going to run over and lick it up. I sure hope I get some glass in my glass. All right, so Kyle and Tiffany, you guys, Michael found you in New York and brought you down here to open Birch and Barley. And one of the things we were talking about last night is, you know, sometimes restaurants, there's a lot of hoopla about restaurants, and they open, and they're great crowds for the first week, and then the place is just like, you know, like a cemetery.
Till the next new place.
That place took off the minute it opened, and it's still, if it could take off anymore, I don't know how. It rocks and it rolls.
Where's your question?
How did you do that? Michael brought you in and said, I'm going to open this restaurant on 14th Street, and you said, okay, let's think about that. How did it work?
I think opening day was the scariest day of our life. Somebody came in with a picture of a giant line of people, and we said, what's that? And they said, that's the line of people waiting to get in.
It was pretty brutal. That first day especially, I was crying.
Well, according to Tiffany, you cry a lot. So
this is true.
No, but I mean, looking at what Birch and where it was and what it was going to look like, how did you figure out what to do on the menu?
I think the most important part of why it's still busy and why we still crank really hard, we just never gave up. You know, we never say die. You know.
Well, I think it also has to do with you're constantly evolving. I mean, aside from a couple of dishes like the Brat Burger, maybe, or you know, maybe the Luther or some of the things you do upstairs, that menu is always changing. I mean, I don't go in as much as I would like, but every time I'm in, there's always a whole array of new things on the menu.
Yeah. That's the fun part, you know, and that's how we get good cooks, you know, that's how we get good staff is we keep challenging them, we keep pushing them as hard as we can.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we want to talk about GBD as your recently launched project and then get in a little bit into Blue Jacket.
You're not allowed to leave.
Okay, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Come celebrate Central Farm Market's fifth anniversary season with the freshest produce, dairy, baked goods, fresh fish, meats, poultry, and specialty foods around. Enjoy music, wine tastings, cooking demos and classes, and kids activities at two great locations, Sundays 9 to 1 in downtown Bethesda and Saturdays from 9 to 2 in North Bethesda, Rockville. Come out and see for yourself why Washingtonian and Bethesda magazines hail the markets as the best in the metro area. To learn more and sign up for the weekly e-blast, visit www.centralfarmmarkets.com. The two central locations in downtown Bethesda and North Bethesda Rockville are kid-friendly and dog-friendly, have plenty of parking, and great food. For a listing of food artisans, events, and exact addresses, check out www.centralfarmmarkets.com. That's centralfarmmarkets.com. See you this weekend.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having three number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast. We're talking to all the folks from Neighborhood Restaurant Group, and particularly right now, Kyle Bailey and Tiffany McIsaac from, well, from right now, from Birch and Barley.
I know, it's hard to give you guys Golden like, Brown titles because you're doing so many different things.
You're going to go to Blue Jacket. But let's talk about Golden Brown Delicious, because the donuts, first of all, you made the most amazing donut. Was it a
Tiffany.
Pyramid?
No, a cake, a donut cake.
I don't know what it was for Eli's.
Oh, bar right. Mitzvah. Yeah, for the bar mitzvah.
Holy cow.
Donut cake. Yeah.
We put it out for people to look at, you know, at the beginning. You were there, but
at the beginning.
And people, you know, just so people could see it because it was so beautiful. And people just started taking it. And I was like, no, this is dessert.
Then Nikki freaked out. She's like, get it out of here. Get it out of here. Everybody's
so
eating it.
That gives our listeners some idea about what they can find at Golden Brown Delicious. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Kyle and I work on it together. He does the fried chicken portion and I do the donuts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're open all day, every day, early, late. Perfect to come and start your morning or end your night.
But it's not just food. You also have cocktails there as well.
We do, yeah. We have great beer. We always have great beer, great wine.
Mm-hmm.
A concise list, but great selection to go with the donuts and the chicken. And then, of course, the punch, which is one of my favorite parts. I've been trying to get punch on a menu forever, so...
Right.
I mean, it's all right.
Well,
it's all donuts. It's all chicken. Has anybody died yet?
No, stop it.
Not that we know of, but
can we talk about the fried chicken?
Yeah,
can we talk about the fried chicken, Kai?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about the fried chicken, some of the dishes that are available. And you guys are doing brunch now, too, right?
Yes, we sure are.
Okay, so let's hear it. I need a little bit more than that, Kyle. Can you elaborate?
Kyle,
elaborate.
Kyle, you're a stirring storyteller. Just a silver tongue devil.
So the idea about with the chicken and the donuts was that we were going to open up a fried chicken and donut shop with a ton of booze in it. But we're going to do it kind of classy.
That sounds really classy.
You should have called it the oxymoron.
The donuts are made. They're all handmade. You know, Tiff makes all these donuts every day. They're super fresh, super super tasty.
Mm-hmm.
The chicken is raised antibiotic-free and hormone-free. Super big-time quality in all this and all this food, you know.
Can we talk about the bao buns? Because that's my favorite thing there. Who's making the buns? Are you making the buns? Who's making the buns?
Yes. Me.
Tiffany's making the buns. They're insane.
All bread is me.
But was that something that you created? Because I've never seen that before.
Everything good on the menu Tiff created.
Did you come up with the fried chicken bao buns?
That's not true. We created it together, babe.
Aw, that's so nice.
She told me what to do and then I did it.
as all good marriages.
Welcome
That's
to marriage.
That's how it all works.
Actually, we went to the Source, and he makes awesome bao buns.
He does.
And I was like, you know, it'd be really good if we shove fried chicken and mayonnaise in one of these.
And, that's
and,
a girl.
And so it
lo
is.
Lo and behold, it was delicious. We find that anything you put spicy mayonnaise on is automatically amazing.
Yeah. I'm totally with you. All right, moving on. Blue Jacket. So how are you guys able to work at all these different restaurants? I mean, will you be the chef at Blue Jacket? Will you be there? Will you be at Birch and Barley? Like, how do you feel that, Kyle, where you'll be and what you'll be doing?
I'll split my time as best I can. Mm-hmm. I've got a really great staff. I've got guys who are total bosses all over the place.
And they
love it. You know, they love the challenge.
Okay, so what are you going to be doing at Blue Jacket? I mean, are we allowed to talk about the menu? Is that under wraps?
Okay.
Tiffany says yes.
You know what's funny? He didn't look at Michael, who owns the place. He looked at Tiffany.
Michael looked at Tiffany, too.
So it's
the menu at Blue Jacket's going to be a lot like Birch and Barley, the American local seasonal kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But you won't be serving the same dishes, will you?
No, not at all.
Okay.
It'll be a little bit more straightforward food. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of pastas, burgers.
Well, given the area,
it's so near the stadium. We want it to be a kind of place where, you know, people can come in and have an amazing experience, and they can also pop in on their way to and from a game and, you know, have a great meal with the family. So I think it's going to be really all-purpose in that way.
Excellent. All right, well, that's a perfect segue. Well, we're going to say goodbye to you guys, and best of luck
bye.
At the Crab Cut competition. Thank you so much. Good luck.
They're like a champion.
Yeah, all right. On to Blue Jacket. Let's talk about this new brewery.
Let's get Greg Engert,
with Greg Engert
up to the microphone
and
Megan Parisi. Come on, slide up there, Megan. Don't let him take over. All right, so Blue Jacket's going to have, 19, what's the number of?
Fermenters, yeah.
19 fermenters. It's huge. It's like 4 or 5 times the number that any other local brew pub has, right?
Yeah. And so, the idea with that was...
does that mean? I mean, can we explain it?
It's like we're inspired by Churchkey. And one of the great things about craft beer is that you can make something new literally every day. Mm-hmm. And we wanted to have that opportunity. So we can do 5,000 barrels of beer, which is, you know, roughly 10,000 kegs a year out of this production brewery. But we didn't want to just do that with 4 or 5 different beers in volume. We wanted to be able to make as many different kinds of beers and experiment all the time. So the more different fermentation vessels you have, the more different beers you can kind of work on and innovate upon. So we're going to open with 15 of our own Blue Jacket beers.
So all right, I'm going to ask both of you this because, you know, I'm not totally beer proficient. But so if you make some of these beers, are you bottling them? Are you putting them in kegs and then you can start with the next batch? How do you...
Well, we'll be doing some of both, actually. So a lot of service will be done in kegs, but we are also going to start off, you know, bottling as well, so that we can have bottles in the Blue Jacket brand. Not of every beer that we make necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Not every beer is really meant to hold up in a bottle. Things that you really just want to drink drink right away. It'd be best to serve right on site. Have some of those beers just, you know, being served, you know, right over the bar or, you know, to other establishments, you know, locally. But we will be doing both. So when you brew with these 19 vessels, to have 15 taps, that still leaves, a few extra tanks behind. So you can always have, you know, something kind of, you know, as we'd say, like in the tank or in the can right behind it. So everything's properly aging. You don't necessarily have to rush anything out to make sure that, oh my gosh, we have something on this, you know, on that 15th tap.
So let me ask. So you're looking to have, let's say on any given day at Blue Jacket, how many beers that are yours available?
15.
At least 15 on draft.
On draft.
We're also going to have, we'll start bottling and we'll start aging some of the bottles. We'll have like a rotating vintage beer list from our kind of stash of Blue Jacket beers.
Okay.
And we're going to have 5 cask ales, just as we do at Churchkey. A majority of those will also be Blue Jacket. So
now I'm just putting this out there, and this is not coming out of my mouth, but it is something I've heard from...
Of course it's coming out of your
mouth. Well, you know
mouth.
What I mean? Like, I heard this from other people who are in the beer community who have sort of said, yeah, they're just going to carry their own beers, which is totally not the case, right?
No,
I mean, you're...
No, no, no not
It
at
seems
all.
So no. silly to say something like that.
Yeah, no, I think... And it's an interesting question, but we're just trying to... We've been serving so many amazing beers for so long. We kind of want to add a new voice to the conversation, but we're not going to dominate that conversation with Blue Jacket. It's just another... great local brewery that can join in with others. And that's one of the reasons, in fact, that we're going to have 5 guest taps on at Blue Jacket. So, you know, it's...
What does that mean?
It means that in addition to the 15 drafts from Blue Jacket, we're going to have 5 other brewers' beers on tap. Mm-hmm. So it's more, it's not just a Blue Jacket place. It's about craft beer.
Well, okay. I want to... Take That's us to another place, because you guys are going to give tours, it sounds like. Customers will be able
Absolutely.
To see. And I have to read you this line, because I loved it. Customers will be able to explore the idiosyncratic setup via guided tours that wind around the M.C. Escher-like staircases. And all I can think of is this place is going to look like Hogwarts.
What? Hogwarts, yeah. But we're industrial, I guess. But it really is. When you stand, you know, in the bar area and you look at the way the stairs are, just because of the shape of the frame of the building, floors had to go in certain places, and it's not just, second floor isn't just one straight level around. It's staggered on one side of the building, and it's a little higher in the middle of the building. So you've got to have multiple points of access. And you think about how unusual that is. But it's just what you've got. You've got to make the make the most of the space that you have. So you're maximizing what's available. And it really does look like an Escher staircase that I'll be going up and down a lot.
Good exercise.
We just got back from Disneyland.
Yes.
I just went to Disney World. I want to know how much the wands will cost at your place.
Greg, what are you pouring?
So this is one of the more recent collaboration releases we've done. So we've been busy not just designing and installing this brewery, restaurant, and bar, but also brewing collaboration beers. Mm-hmm. So kind of... you know, traveling around and brewing with some of our favorite brewers all over the U.S. and even in Belgium. Uh-huh. So this is a beer that we brewed in Brussels with Brasserie de la Seine, and it's called Grey Jacket. It is a deliciously dry Belgian style Saison.
Can I just ask a quick question, because we have to move on to Tony? But I don't know, how do you partner with these people? I mean, do you tell them what you want and then they brew it?
It's very organic. No. So we go and
it's
we do
discussion.
It.
It's all discussion.
It's all email. It's really.
And then are you in there together,
yeah,
making,
oh, yeah,
it happen? How much
fun? We just
fun.
Bounce ideas back and forth. And literally, we've done almost 20 different beers so far in collaboration, and every one becomes something that neither brewer would have done on their own.
That's so neat. How much fun?
It's,
I mean,
great.
For both
really
of you,
is.
That must
really
be
fun.
Such an incredible experience to be able to do. All right,
Tony.
Tony Chittum.
While we're drinking
Pull
beer,
up to the
let's
mic.
Get Tony up to the...
And Lambrusco, which
so,
you're right.
I'm on Lambrusco.
Brent, this Lambrusco is not nearly as sweet.
Yes,
that's
tannic.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, so Tony, you're going to be taking over at Iron Gate. When does that open? Do we know?
We're not allowed to say.
We're not allowed to say.
We are not allowed to say.
We're
sometime this summer.
Have you already started, I assume you have, breaking out the menu and deciding what you're going to be serving?
He's ready.
Yes.
So, give us a hint. Facing the microphone. That's up, boy.
There you go.
We're gonna it's gonna be separated into sections. I think the first section is gonna be breads and pies. Something I got into recently, just playing with making different types of breads and the sort of similarities that Italy and Greece have with savory tarts and
things
like that.
Can I back you
that?
Up a little bit? Because we really haven't explained what your like sort of mission is for Iron Gate as far as the kind of menu you're going to
sentence.
Do. So, you know, I mean, are you? Is it going to be Mediterranean? Is it going to be Italian,
it
Greek?
It's
Tell
fine.
Us. Let's hear it.
Greek and Italian. We want to use local. We want to use all the farmers and the people that I use normally and I've built relationships with over the year to use the best products that we can find in Italian, Greek preparations.
Okay.
So if there's a chance for us to use a local farmer to bring in a young sheep's milk cheese instead of importing a young pecorino or something like that, mm-hmm, we're going to take advantage of those farmers. But there's going to be circumstances where we need to bring in things like capers, you know, things that we can't get locally, olives. But we're trying to source as much as we can. Like, mm-hmm, you know, we're using an olive oil from Georgia. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find those specialty people too.
Well, so in the interim, as the place is still being built out, how are you using your time to help round out your menu? There's not a lot of room for dead air on radio, just so you know.
I've done some traveling. I went on quite a few stages in New York, mm-hmm, Philly, around the East Coast. We're fortunate to have the commissary to be able to work on recipes and things. So I've been playing with different breads, making fresh cheeses, things that I can work into the menu, researching. All the Let me just say that
if I were you, I'd approach it differently because you're not going to get many trips to Greece if you're looking to Georgia for your olive oil. You're not thinking here, Tony, and I'm sure it's early in the day, but we'll talk.
And how are you and Brent going to work together to put together, you know, is it all going to be Mediterranean wines? Are you going to look to do different things?
We're looking for old world wines. I mean, we want to concentrate in quite a few Greek and Italian wines, obviously, but all through the Mediterranean. And then if we find a good wine that we like from Virginia that plays into the list, we're going to use those too.
And just to better give people an idea, because, I mean, I never went to the original Iron Gate, but it's a lot of outdoor space, correct?
Yeah, we have about, I would say, 60 seats out on the patio. So, yeah, I had never been there before until it closed.
Okay.
Michael is very familiar with the space, so he took me for the first time. And that's the great thing, I think, about the Iron Gate is people like Michael who have been there and experienced are going to be experienced that are going to be really excited to come back.
Are you guys going to keep the stalls? The tables were
Well, wait, you know what? We have to take a quick break. We have to take a quick break. But when we come back, let's talk about the look of the place. All right, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We have a lot of the neighborhood restaurant group peeps in studio. We're going to talk more when we come back.
Each day, over 49 million Americans live in households that experience hunger, including 17 million children. Johnson's Florist and Garden Centers want to help. They're asking gardeners in the Washington area to plant extra this growing season, and at harvest time, bring that extra to one of their stores in D.C., Kensington, and Olney, Maryland. All donations will go to a local organization that feeds the hungry. Visit johnsonsflorist.com to learn more about the Plant a Row for the Hungry initiative. johnsonsflorist.com.
Have you ever wanted to be a paramedic, firefighter, or EMT? Now you can. Join the Bethesda Chevy Chase Rescue Squad. The squad responds to over 10,000 emergency, medical, and fire rescue calls each year, and most members are volunteers. When they aren't saving lives, most work or attend school full-time. No experience is needed. You'll receive top-notch, life-saving training free of charge. Apply online today at bccrs.org or call 301-657-5557.
Escape the everyday to the close-by Early Mountain Vineyards in Madison, Virginia. A relaxing getaway just a short drive from D.C., it has an award-winning tasting room, breathtaking views of the Blue Ridge, and the best of Virginia wines, locally grown food, live music, and slow sunsets. Visit earlymountain.com or follow them on Twitter at Early Mountain. Mention Foodie and the Beast and this ad for a free flight of wines at your next visit.
Hi, this is Hillary Howard. Join me October 12th and 13th for the Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember. This year, we have 55 or 30-mile bike rides held at National Harbor Saturday, October 12th, and a 5K in Washington at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Sunday, October 13th. The Law Enforcement Ride and Run to Remember raises funds and awareness while commemorating the service and sacrifice of law enforcement officers. Go to rideandruntoremember.org to register today.
Okay, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we are talking to the folks from Neighborhood Restaurant Group. Tony Chittum was the executive chef at Vermilion and is now going to be the executive chef leading the way at the Iron Gate. And let's talk about the property. Until it closed, it was the longest, the restaurant in longest operation in the city, correct?
Correct, yes.
And it was, that building, that house was, belonged to General Nelson Miles, who was a Civil War and Indian Wars veteran. Yeah. And I remember
I got the whole history last night.
Yeah, it's very cool. He's the guy that found custard all sliced and diced. Interesting guy.
Yeah,
but,
yes, Michael's
makes me think of charcuterie. I remember that the tables were set in the former horse stalls and all that. It was very picturesque. Are you guys going to keep that? Or?
The horse stall tables were a little unwieldy. So these tables were probably about a foot wide and about 10 feet long. So they weren't the most comfortable. We're keeping some of the
Wilbur.
Yeah. We're keeping some of the horse stalls in the space, but we are reconfiguring that part of the seating because it didn't work when it was there. Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense to reach across four people to try and serve them.
And so what's the interior going to look like?
Well, the interior is a stables building. It was, and you mentioned Nelson Miles. He was a Civil War cavalry officer, and after the war, he was apparently.
Oh God, I could see the road we're going down right now. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Well, he was known for racing his horses in the area. He was kind of well known for that, and so this is where he kept the horses. Never built to be a restaurant. It's very cozy, warm, huge fireplace, which was probably the only source of heat in the space. So you're going to have a wood-burning oven on one side, the fireplace on the other, a little bit low ceiling, but with a vault in the middle. It's going to be a very cozy, intimate, romantic space.
And how many seating is in the interior?
We got about 50 seats inside.
A tiny.
This is a debate we have.
Yeah.
Okay. He says 50, I say 5. I think we're shooting for around 50 now is the latest.
Yeah. And is there a bar?
The bar is in the entryway. So there's this, when the iron gate is at the front of a 60-foot long entryway that's about 12 feet wide, and the bar is in there. It's open-ended at both sides.
Okay.
It's just a big carriageway. It's
neat.
Yeah.
It's going to be very different.
Very original.
All right. Now we got to jump off of this and talk to Nate Anda about Red Apron Butchery.
Because, Nate, we've had you on the show a couple times to talk about your products and what you're working on.
And
but
delicious.
Now, and they are delicious.
Where's that plate?
It's all gone.
Get it over here. I'm the host, damn it. Give me that thing. There's nothing left but bones.
There's no bones there.
I know.
That's how rumors get started.
Thanks,
Mom. They're only going to be serving bones.
There'll be plenty of bones.
So now you've got two locations open, a third one on the way. Tell us about. You know, you work so hard to do all these different kind of cured and smoked meats, but you're doing so much more than that. For people who haven't had the opportunity to go into your Mosaic location or Union Market, give people a little walkthrough of what you got going on.
It's basically the last 5 years have been a lot of...
You see, Tony, it could have been 5 years.
Yeah. Be prepared, buddy. I don't want to say too much, but I think it took a long time for this project to happen, but I was able to play around a lot. I think the goal with Michael and I, we never wanted to be something that someone else could get anywhere. We wanted something to be completely unique and genuine to Red Apron. So just for example, the stuff that you were able to try today, like within that plate, it was 5 years. Literally, if you combined all the age that goes into everything, it would be 5 years.
That's amazing.
Between a 28-month ham, a 10-month ham, and then... 6 or 8, 10 months combined and in there and everything. But they all started off as a recipe and they were all just kind of be able to branch out into their other directions.
Well, can I ask a question? So like a 28-month ham. I mean, I'm just sort of curious. I mean, is
I
that...
can't help it. I'm a 63-year-old ham.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you.
64.
Three.
Is that something that people normally do? I mean, do people really age things that long these days? Are you playing with it? Like, are you looking at recipes and being like, this is could be add I mean, more to it? I mean, does it add that much more?
About this job is, I mean, Michael can agree here, it's the return on product. It's investing all this time into something, and whether you take it down at one point or you let it go. And there is this, like for everything here, it's, I know it's going to work by now, but there's always like a time where I will cut it down early or I will let it go too long. But
what happens when you let it go too long?
I turn it into dust.
Oh.
Well, let me ask a question about, because, you know, it was only in the last couple of years that charcuterie started to appear on people's menus and all that. Are the other
on everybody's menu.
Other restaurants, and I'm even wondering if they're yet teaching this at cooking schools for professional chefs. It sounds like it's a real sort of pioneering thing that you're doing.
You know, I don't know if they teach it. I mean, that was one of the main things I wanted to learn when I went to school. That was 12 or 13 years ago, and it was 3 weeks long out of 2 years. So you kind of, if you want to get into it, you got to just kind of, you know, find the people that are doing it and go and learn from them. Fortunately, you know, within working at Tallulah, we started doing it, getting whole animals, and you have to figure out what you're going to do with the other 800 pounds of beef when you're not, you know, because you're only selling the tenderloin, the ribeye, and the New York strip. You still got a ton of other product left.
I hear you almost burned the place down finding out that.
I've done it multiple times. That was the only one that made it to print.
So is that what happened with that hardware store? Aren't you guys new there?
No. That's a Michael conversation.
So are It's just a question. Are your competitors generally getting their charcuterie from other, you know, third parties, or are they trying to do this?
I would say, what do you mean?
I'll end. I think, yes, nine times out of ten they are.
People are not making it themselves.
Most people are not making it themselves. Or you see on the menu, you see, you know, a selection of house-made and other charcuterie. When you really dig into it, there's maybe one or two things that are house-made. Some of the places actually that do a whole lot more than that. I mean, we have several chefs in our group who are still doing a whole lot. Kyle and Tony, two of them. But I think that, you know, the 5 years that we keep talking about, you know, all Nate, the thing that Nate is doing, I think, that is different than a lot of other people is the experimentation, is the new stuff. But that all starts from a base of probably about 2 or 3 years of just working on
classics.
The classics and mastering those techniques and those items so that experimentation is really successful and well thought out.
Well, let me ask both of you, though, because we haven't really talked about the commissary, but with what you're doing, all the sort of rules and regulations. I mean, if somebody's making a little bit of charcuterie in his restaurant, you don't need to get the same kind of overseeing, you know, government involved when you're trying to sell mass products, right? I mean, when you were doing the farmers markets, did you have to get stuff approved by DC?
We were inspected by the Department of Agriculture.
You were?
Yeah.
Okay.
For certain products. And what we're doing now is we're just broadening the number of products that we can that we can sell.
So do they come in every time, like with each new product?
They will eventually. Right now, we're only selling through our own stores.
Okay.
When we really start selling wholesale, that's when all of those rules. But it's built to, you know, to get those certifications. And it's difficult, you know.
I bet.
Yeah.
Well, so I know we're not allowed to talk about what's going on in the New Red Raven when it opens. But that's over in Penn Quarter.
Yep.
Totally different market.
Completely.
Because the other two are more, you know,
but we are allowed to say that you'll be serving breakfast and lunch with sandwiches and hot dogs, your version of the hot dog and burgers.
It's a long day.
It is.
It's going to be a long day.
But are you making, so not only are your products available, but you're also, you're selling cuts of beef
we're
and
a full
pork.
Service. It's more
it's
like
really
a European style butcher shop. Where
and
you
I can't believe
in.
You didn't bring me any mustard today. Do you know, like, we live off of the Red Apron mustard?
I didn't
mustard.
Bring my package in yet.
God, my mustard is my favorite. But you serve very interesting cuts. They're not what people expect.
Well, I think we have gone looking at a butcher shop the way that a chef would look at getting a whole cow or a whole pig, and also looking at like the European cuts that aren't normally seen in the butcher shops. So it's unfortunately it doesn't create like another 100 pounds that we can sell, but we do get to bring in other products.
Well,
I mean, we do get to
well,
find
like
other
let's
products.
Let's
talk about where your meats are coming from.
Amazing.
Because
I love that. Yeah.
Because people certainly want to know that. And I noted in the materials we got that they're all animal welfare approved farms. So
the pork is 100% animal welfare approved. Probably by the end of the year, we should be 100% with beef, pork, and lamb.
That's
amazing. We're working with a number of farmers in Virginia to achieve that with beef and with lamb. But pork, we're 100%, and that's our goal, and that's been our goal from the beginning.
Then you can, that can parse out to all the restaurants.
Yeah, animal welfare approved has the most stringent, rigorous certification, and it's available to any farmer regardless of their size.
Mm-hmm.
So the smallest farmer, it costs them nothing. All they have
unlike
to do.
Unlike organic for.
Yeah, unlike
produce.
A lot of these certifications that are really biased towards large, you know, industrial scale farming operations.
So you have happy, healthy charcuterie.
It's a start to finish operation. Like they, while some things just oversee the slaughter and some things just might oversee the birthing of it, like animal welfare sees it from start to finish. They certify the farm and they also certify the slaughter facility.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. No, I'm okay. Just letting you know that it's time to go to a commercial.
Minutes. No, we have 2 minutes, right?
No, we don't.
Oh, we have 1 minute.
We have 1 minute.
Okay.
All right. Well, I guess if I can at some point, if I'm getting a tour at Blue Jacket, do you do classes? Do you have time for that even to show people how charcuterie is made?
He's not at Blue Jacket. He's at Red Apron.
No. I'm saying at Blue Jacket, you'll get a tour and you'll see behind the scenes.
Right.
Can that happen at Red Apron? Will it happen?
We talked about that.
There's definitely classes and we've thought about it a lot. We did some living social hog butchering classes, which is basically me to like jump in to talk to people because I usually stand behind the counter and walk away. It's fun. It's actually fun to talk about it and maybe not in the commissary just because it's such a clean, sterile environment that I can't have a lot of people come in and just hang out. But hopefully in the stores.
We'll I just think charcuterie is like a whole new world for diners.
Absolutely.
And I'll bet you most people don't even really have a sense of what they're, how it's made, what they're getting.
Absolutely. So. Yeah, there's a lot more interest in it. People want to make their own bacon, do things at home.
Absolutely. So,
that's for the next show.
Okay.
All right, we need to take a break.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're going to talk more beer, and I think we have some punch in our future. We'll be back in just a sec.
We're all different, but if we all stand up as one, no one stands alone.
Won't you stand up, stand up, stand up?
One by one, we can change the world. It's up to you and me. On Monday, October 7th, let's all wear our blue shirts for World Day of Bullying Prevention.
Won't you stand up and use your voice?
Get your blue shirt at stompoutbullying.org.
If talking and texting interferes with a walk down the street, imagine what might happen if you're driving. Focus on the road, not your conversation. Your brain can't do both safely. No dialing, no talking, no texting to arrive safe.
Hi, I'm Brooke Delaney.
And I'm Congressman John Delaney.
As a teen, I know not to text while driving. My dad and I ask you to focus on the road, not your conversation.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Okay, this is a fashion first and definitely fashion forward. Imagine models strutting the runway in fashion made entirely of chocolate. Charity in Chocolate, a night to enjoy D.C.'s best food, fashion, and fun, hosted at the Mandarin Oriental on Friday, September 6th. This sweet event will support the Heart of America Foundation's Books from the Heart program. Give kids the tools to read, succeed, and make a difference. Get your tickets before they melt away at charityinchocolate.org, sponsored in part by Target.
In times of joy, in moments of grief, broadcasters come through, even when all else fails. Today, with more ways than ever to experience the moments that transform our lives, Americans still choose broadcast radio and television more than all other media combined. We are the local broadcasters of radio and television, reaching more people, touching more lives. Brought to you by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
We are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. Before we get back into the show, I just want to quickly thank all the folks that have supported this show so that we can stay on the air, which is what our goal is. The people at Georgetown Bagelry, always supplying the most delicious bagels. That no matter what we're doing in studio, everybody always snarfs up the bagels. Neighborhood Restaurant Group, you know all those folks. We're talking to them today. The two founding farmers and Farmer Fisher and Baker down on the Georgetown Harbor, Central Farm Markets, the Black's Restaurant Group, Post down at the Monaco Hotel, Union Market, Carpenter Shelter, and Early Mountain Vineyards.
Right, where we'll be next week.
Where we'll be next week. So let's get back to
Greg
Michael Babin.
No, what? Greg and Megan.
Oh, let's get back to Greg and Megan.
Yeah, why don't we get back to Greg and Megan? I mean, you could talk to Michael Babin, but I'm going to talk to Greg and Megan.
We'll talk about Arcadia.
No, we're talking about Arcadia at the end.
Let's talk about Arcadia at the end.
Okay.
That's
good. Great idea.
Man, we're professional. Kids, don't try this at home.
So we were talking a little bit off air about the collaborations you guys are doing. Let's talk about what you just poured now and, you know, how beer is infusing itself, not just at the opening of Blue Jacket, but at all the Neighborhood Restaurant Group locations.
Well, I can address this beer in particular, and this was kind of a unique type of collaboration. This is Pretty in Pink, which we brewed in collaboration with and out at Lost Rhino in Ashburn, also with Hardywood Park and Vintage 50. The whole inspiration behind this project was by Becky Jordan, who's the executive chef at Lost Rhino. She wanted to do a beer for breast cancer awareness and, you know, and do it as a fundraiser. So, you know, as women, she looked for, women in the brewing industry to, you know, to be partners in making this. But, you know, the challenge with doing something like this, when you've got a limitation like pink as, marker for, you know, for breast cancer awareness, which I'm not a real fan of, but that's my own thing. But to make a beer like that and make sure that it's not a gimmick, because you could do anything to add some sort of color, have a pink beer, and then say, okay, so we've done a beer for breast cancer, you know, awareness. That's not the way that any of us rolls. We wanted to make the beer still had to stand for itself. The mission was still going to be clear. Money that was raised, proceeds were donated to the Massey Cancer Center.
Right.
And so going to a great cause, But, you know, the beer still had to, even though it was going to raise money for the great cause, it still had to stand on its own. So sure. A lot of effort went into making sure that not only did we get the color parameters that we were looking for as far as saying, okay, so we kind of made it pink, but the flavor, the balance, the sweetness, the bitterness, all that still had to make us feel like we were proud of the product, not just the mission.
So it just kind of shows all the work that goes into each and every beer.
Oh,
I mean, clearly you guys are working
very overthink
hard.
It. Yeah, for sure.
You have a thing. Shocking. Yeah. Okay, Brett, why don't you come up? Because you just poured us a punch, and this is served at?
Served at GBD.
And so did you come up with the punch, or is that Dan Searing?
It was myself, Dan Searing, and Alex
Taylor. So another collaboration.
Manager there. Yeah.
Okay.
We basically met up with Dan Searing. We went over some recipes, talked about the concept, tasted, batched, made recipes, and then this is one of the punches that we have there right now. I brought this one because this is probably the simplest one for anyone at home to make.
Okay.
It's an apple shrub, and shrubs are really popular right now. Mm-hmm. You just take apple cider vinegar, sugar, and you can grate apples on a cheese grater or a food processor. You let it sit like in an infusion type jar for like 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Shrub's done, and then you just add in equal parts water and equal parts gin. This is a Half Moon Bay gin out of New York made with Hudson River apples, too.
Oh, neat. Well, and this is not, because some shrubs are really, really... And some drinks made with shrubs are very vinegary.
Bring me a shrub.
Shrubbery. Right, shrubbery. Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we know.
Okay. But it's not too vinegary, because sometimes the vinegar can be overwhelming, don't you think?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You have to balance it with sugar, but then you don't want it to be too sugary or like a headache. So then diluting with water is key, too. This is the type of punch where you drink it with a ton of ice on it. It kind of gets better as it gets colder and as it gets a little bit of, you know, water to it.
Well, we'll never get a headache today because we've only had beer and champagne and punch.
Dan was in here, and I don't think we ever asked him. Any idea?
But punch is like a loose term. By definition, you're generally going to have a citrus. I guess if it's alcoholic, you could have like a spirit. And there's generally some type of maybe some type of drying effect, some type of like tea or some type of herb or something like that. Mm. But normally it's like a citrus, an herb, water, sugar, and alcohol optional.
I think the name punch is because they're subtle and you drink them and suddenly you can't talk. Suddenly your teeth fall out and you can't talk.
Okay, so Michael, now we get to go back to you and talk about Arcadia, because that is quite an incredible part of Neighborhood Restaurant Group.
Yeah, and I have to say that it's not technically a part of Neighborhood Restaurant Group, but we created a nonprofit about about 3 years ago. I'm the president of the board, the chairman of the board, I should say. But we have an executive director and a staff that works on all of our programs, all the programs. It's been a lot of fun. It's been very rewarding.
Can you tell people what it is?
Yeah, Arcadia is a nonprofit. Actually, the full title is Arcadia Center for Sustainable Food and Agriculture. And the idea behind Arcadia is to try to make a positive impact on the food system in the region, in the D.C. region, stretching out to the productive areas around the city. And, there are so many problems with the food system around the country. And we felt like if we could do something really meaningful, try some new things, experiment in D.C. that we could have an impact here, but we could also help, hopefully, create some models for positive action around the country. The food system that we have right now that we're all in delivers calories by the boatload for next to nothing, but it is incredibly detrimental to health, to animal welfare, to just about the people who work in it all suffer from it. So, the idea is just for us to do something in the arena that we live and work in to try to make a difference and sort of transcend the day in, day out of our jobs.
So you're planting and raising crops, those are going to go into the city where people are still shopping at convenience stores.
Right now, we're planting and raising crops out at Woodlawn Plantation. That's our headquarters in Virginia. And 90% of that food is sold through the mobile market. The mobile market is a school bus that we've refitted as a farmer's market. It makes 9 stops every week in neighborhoods that lack access to fresh food in D.C., in Virginia, and I think now we have one in Maryland. And we launched that program a couple of years ago. There is so much more demand for it that now we're thinking about getting a second bus. Now we're working on a food hub that will distribute sustainable, locally grown food to consumers and particularly institutions, schools, hospitals in the area, working on a farm incubator to try to train the next generation of farmers. Average age of a farmer in the States is about 60.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but don't you feel like there's sort of this, I mean, in the hipstery world, I mean, a lot of this craft and artisan products that are coming out are coming from this whole generation of younger people who are looking, who are talking the same way you are.
Yeah, I think there's no question. It's in the air. This is there's been no better time. It's going to take a tremendous amount of work because, as I said, the you know, the world that we're in, the foodie world or whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
is a tiny fraction of the people who are out there eating. And if you're poor, you're probably not a foodie. That's just the reality. So the things that we do, you know, at Arcadia are really targeted towards the people who need, who are suffering from, you know, their health is suffering from
there's diabetes
is just exploding.
Right.
So do you want to give the Arcadia website so people can go learn more about it?
It's arcadiafood.org.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, by all means, you know, there are tons of opportunities to volunteer, to get involved. At the farm, on the mobile market, and the other programs that we're working
on. Well, Eli Nellis has been out there spreading horse poo for the last 6 months.
That's right.
No, but he's really, it's been such a positive experience for our son to participate in it. I have 2 seconds. you know, I think it's really important for people to know that getting your hands dirty, getting out there and doing it. I think for my 13-year-old son to see what it takes to make food grow.
It's
a really important lesson for him.
It changes the whole perspective, and we see it. We've had probably 5,000 school kids out there over the last few years for field trips. They go home, and we've heard from the parents. They want to eat. For the first time, they're interested in vegetables. They're interested mm-hmm. in eating better food.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you guys because we got 1 minute. Very quickly, if you want to join us for a live show next week on Father's Day, we're going to be doing Foodie and the Beast at Early
With the
Mountain
father
Vineyard.
Of all fathers.
Me?
David Nellis.
We have 5 kids, so
we do
I
have
am
five
the father.
Children.
And I'll tell you how that happens when the show's over. You go to earlymountain.com.
Talk about spreading it around.
There's a huge barbecue festival that's going to be happening out there. It's going to be awesome. And we've done an event there. It's just an amazing place. So please join us. Go to earlymountain.com. It is almost sold out, actually.
Yes, it is.
But there are a couple of, I shouldn't say a couple, there are probably 30 tickets left.
I want to thank our guests for coming in today.
Oh my God.
The entire group of Neighborhood Restaurant Group has come in today. Thank you all for pouring and serving food and telling us about everything you have going on, because it's really exciting. This is David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast. Everybody, please have a delicious week.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics, Federal News Radio and federalnewsradio.com. This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this